Hey, welcome back. I'm Joey.
I'm Adam.
This is the Pothole Pastors Podcast. So if you're here by accident, we're glad that you are. And if you're here on purpose, thanks again for tuning in. We're going to forego our normal opening stuff. Maybe we can even get out of here without the theme song this week.
Ooh, I need to re-record that because the recording I did use for the first couple of times is just the first time I did it. It doesn't sound very good. I should give it to like Brock. Your cousin, because he masters music and just make it sound really nice.
Maybe. Or we can just let it die.
Let it
die. But we're just going to jump into part two of our interview with Chris Mack. We have a great conversation. And this week, we're going to be touching on specifically racial reconciliation in light of the gospel. So, thanks again for tuning in and enjoy part two of the interview. Hey, man. So, Chris, we do want to open up, you know, the can of worms that we touched on a little bit, you know, racial reconciliation, racial justice. You know, I think we want to be a place where we can talk about real things like that. And probably, I mean, obviously COVID-19 is like full throttle in the front of the news right now. But, you know, one of the most consistent things that has been in the front of the news the last several years, not even just a year, but like 4 or 5 years, has been racial tension. And, you know, what does it look like for there to be racial justice, equality? You know, a lot of things that I think many of us don't have answers for completely. You know, and I think, and I do want to touch on a little bit of the, I remember I started walking through, so something I love about Chi Alpha is we have a diversity task force, and they're really all about putting forward what does it mean to be ministers of the gospel that also embrace diversity and celebrate diversity. And I remember taking a class where it was like, it was designed to show you, you know, what are your biases that you already have. You know, and then what, not only yours, but what does society as a whole already have? And I remember going through, it was a pretty thorough class going through that. And I remember coming out of the other end being like, I might be a racist. Like, honestly, you know, like I never thought that about myself, but just like the whole idea of, you know, I think you're right. People kind of cringe when they hear white supremacy or even like white privilege. And I know several of my white friends that are just like, you know, we're not, you know, I don't have white privilege. You know, I've struggled through my life. I've had some of the same kind of issues. I've had hardship, but I think the clarity to me came when someone said white privilege isn't about you not having struggles or issues, but it's because you've never had struggles and issues because of your skin color.
Yep.
You know, you've had those maybe from, your environment wasn't great. Maybe it was some dumb choices or a mixture of both, but it was never because you were white that you struggled, you know, compared to you take an African American or a Latino or an Asian American and they probably very well have faced racism or struggles because of who they are. So we want to be a courageous podcast that talks about that stuff. So, how have you experienced that? Since, I mean, coming from Indy to Muncie is a huge shift because Muncie is not a very diverse place. There's diversity here, but it's not, especially compared to Indianapolis, it's much less diverse. Do you feel like you have experienced things in your time here in Muncie that have surprised you, things that have maybe even some struggles as an African-American man in ministry? What are some of the struggles that you've faced and what are you hoping to bring to light? Not as an angry person who just wants to be heard, but as someone who wants to see that reconciliation of the gospel play forward, like you talked about.
Yeah, that's real. Well, I think what will help even listeners in knowing now is if you guys are not aware already, I'm a black man. but I mean, I grew up in a culture that was white. You know what I mean? And so, when I mentioned the second grade being that time of my life where my dad was working on music, it was in building a studio in his garage. I mean, we had moved from the west side of Indianapolis to the south side of Indianapolis, which is a cultural shift, right? In others' eyes, cultural shock, you know what I mean?
Right.
Going from being mainly around people of my skin and ethnicity to a culture that's not. But I think because I experienced that early on, it was easy for me to grow accustomed to being surrounded around white people. Mm-hmm. I think in that, what can happen is the process of assimilation, where for me, I started to do things that were culturally appropriate in white spaces, right? So changing the way that I talk, and the way, not necessarily the way that I dress, but I think more so the way that I talk, the way that I spoke, show that I wanted to conform so that way I wouldn't be made fun of if I talk with slang or if I, you know what I mean, the way that, wasn't necessarily the way that I dressed, but I just remember speaking, the way that I spoke being the main thing.
Is that something you felt like you had to do? Like if you didn't do that?
It was like bouncing back and forth. The way it is, and here's an example, is I had a friend at Ball State who he was mixed with Black African American and also Latino descent. So like those two cultures coming together. And he lived in Gary, Indiana, but he went to Ball State. And he told me, he was talking to me and another friend who was Asian. He was letting us know, like, man, when I go to Gary, like, I don't talk the same way I talk when I go to Ball State. But when I come to Ball State, I don't talk the way that I talk in Gary. And that just made me remember, like, what are the things that I do, like, in speaking? I just find myself very very aware of the way that I speak. And I got to know if I'm doing it to blend in or to avoid tension or, yeah. So just an awareness of, like, whenever I'm with my Black friends, like, I'm going to try to, quote, unquote, sound more Black. You know what I mean? Which isn't a thing, because if, like, culturally, you might hear that more within Black community, but if I come into a white space, I don't want people to always say, oh, well, you sound Black or you sound white right now, you know? Yeah. Then that assumes that everyone who's Black talks with slang. So I just found myself having to, like, which was really good for me being in the impact movement. Mm-hmm. You know, Christian organization that talks about race and ethnicity. It helped me understand that my race is something to be proud of and to celebrate. But because I'd been accustomed to white culture growing up, it was easy for me to take the best parts of Blackness, whether that's music, food, all of the things that Black and white people can agree on, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, white people love that I rap. They love Black food. Those are things we can agree on, right? But the thing I was detached from was the hardships that come with being Black. And so because of that, growing up and going to Ball State, I started to realize that, like, yo, I have not experienced being pulled over by officers because of my skin. But that does not make it any less real for others who are. And so honestly, I relate to an upbringing of whiteness for a while more than I did Blackness. And it meant me having to, as a Black man, relearn those biases and some racial tension and things that happen within my own community. So that was like so strange to rework as someone who's already Black. But the thing is, not all Black people are the same. Not all white people are the same. And so because of that, you're going to meet those people who grow up in different ways, speak, act in different ways, and don't fit that stereotype. All that being said, y'all might have to repeat the question too so I can make sure I don't rabbit trail.
Yeah, you're good.
Chris, have
but,
you...
Yeah,
from
yeah,
like...
Go ahead.
from your background, because one thing that I've tried to, well, one thing that surprised me in ministry, because Joey's a lot more was prepared for ministry than I was, because I didn't go to school for it. But I was surprised how much...
Well, I wouldn't say I was more prepared, but you can keep going.
Well, you went to Bible school. I didn't. But anyway, but anyways, a lot of my technical stuff, like video stuff and things like that, transferred over into ministry more than I thought. But also, too, just some of my background, like, weaved into ministry more than I had anticipated. So I was kind of wondering with you, obviously, you grew up in a different community growing up, not only with who you are, but also your music. Have you seen that influence your ministry and how it's opened doors that maybe other people wouldn't have, if that makes sense?
Mm-hmm. In terms of my upbringing?
From growing up, like, more like in a Black community, but also in a white community, but also with music and everything of your tradition growing up, has that kind of opened doors to meet new people in ministry or things like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, again, going back to City Hope, like, we're a church that wants to pursue what it means to be a diverse church. And I know that that word can become such a buzzword now. Yeah. Often people view it as diversity being this thing where, like, everyone's on equal footing. But a pursuit of diversity means it has to also start with justice and realizing that, man, you got two different cultures that aren't on equal footing. And so that means, what does it mean for particularly white people who are white to say, what does it mean for me to, like, come down and understand so that I can join hands with my counterpart, my brother and sister in Christ that look and grew up differently from me. That shows that, I mean, that's what Christ demonstrates when he is for the poor, the powerless, the widow, the, anyone else I'm missing? Anyone else I'm missing? Know that you are not forgotten. And that's what Jesus does. That being said, our church has been learning what that means for us. How can we model that well? And it's meant opportunities of learning at different conferences, meeting different people who have been pursuing this thing for years. You know, I think one of the people that I appreciate in this season, like, really appreciate, his name is Jamar Tisby. He wrote this book called Color of Compromise. It is a tough book to read, but it is an important book to read because he talks about racism within a church. The reason we are where we are today is all due to how history has played out. And so in order for us to have effective conversations, we need to know historical evidence, historical accounts that have, like, happened and taken place before us.
Right.
You know, I think an example of that is, you know, there are Christians who would question why the Black church exists, you know, like, well, is that, like, reverse racism? Because, like, you guys got a problem with all white churches. Why do Black churches exist? Look at history.
Right.
Blacks weren't allowed in white spaces. And so the Black church had to exist.
Right. Yeah.
And because of that, there are Black churches that are still going, but have been known as safe havens for so long. Mm-hmm. So that's all to say, like, learning from other people who don't live in Muncie has been key for us, because if we want to pursue diversity, we need to know what we're getting into, and we can't pursue this thing as if we have it all together, right, as if we know the answer, as if we're the answer, you know what I mean? And it's also given us a chance to rub shoulders with other congregations in our community, not trying to steal church members away, you know what I mean? Y'all Black, y'all come to our church, you know? Like, that's not the way to do it. Like, look, they've been doing things without us, and they probably know more about this community than us. And so let's glean and let's just learn from them. I met this pastor, Andre Mitchell, I think he's the pastor of the Olivia Temple. I might be wrong. I'm going to have to fact check that. He's going to be like, that's not my church, bro. But, you know, he's someone that we've gotten a chance to rub shoulders with a little bit, and we want to work with more in the community of Muncie. So all that being said, man, like, my upbringing as a black man still learning to figure things out has provided humility to keep doing that, if that makes sense. I think that because I'm black, a lot of people expect me to have the answer to everything, and it provides me an opportunity to say, actually, no, I'm still learning a lot. Because I'm a lot like you. The only difference is my skin is different from yours, and I've been affected by this in ways that I haven't realized.
Well, Chris, I think, and then of course,
hip hop gives me opportunity to meet people all over. You know what I mean? And then I get to give that plug. I work at City Hope, by the way.
Well, Chris, I was really surprised over the last few years. Like I said, I've been kind of pursuing, you know, you and I've had numerous conversations talking about, like, what does it mean to be Christians that pursue, like, true gospel racial diversity? Because there truly is racial diversity that's not of the gospel. That's, like, totally, like, you know, of the world and even prideful and I could even say evil. And something that freaked me out, and I never realized, was we so often treat this like this is a 21st century American problem. Like, you know, the Bible doesn't have anything to say about this, but then read the book of Acts, man. Like, I was reading through that,
bro,
and all of it.
I was just about to flip the hat.
It's all over the place because the Jews were incredibly prejudiced and racist to the Gentile people. And it's like, and it's the same thing. It's like this snobbery, this, we think we're better. And I think what you said here a second ago was so key of on both sides, the Gentile and the Jews had to put down their rights. They had to put down what they thought, you know, was the right way and bow to the cross of Jesus and receive forgiveness and follow that king, you know, not themselves, not their race, not their upbringing, but the king, you know? And so it took humility, you know, it took on both sides. It's not just a matter of, you know, oh, like black people need to get over it or white people need to just like shut up or whatever. It's like, no, both sides, every race, every ethnicity has to come before Jesus with open hands and say, we got nothing. And we're all on the cross is the equalizer. You know, the cross is what equalized us and put us on the same playing field. And even though our cultures may not have, the gospel offers a radically different world. And so when I started looking at the book of Acts through that lens, oh man, it's changed the entire way I've read the New Testament. You know, it's just wild.
Yeah. That's real, man. I'm trying to find this passage. I don't remember what chapter it was. And maybe I can come back to it later, but just as we were talking about this, it made me think of the book of Acts in particular, because of the racism that was experienced. And, in that, you know, makes me think of Paul's letter. Which book was it? I got all my books mixed up. But I know there's been an instance where Paul had to remind Peter.
Yeah.
Like,
it was in Galatians,
Okay, thank you. Thank you. In Galatians, where he had to remind Peter, like, hey, listen, what you expect of them is not necessary. Like, let them be who they are. In order to be with Christ does not mean you need to do X, Y, and Z. Or he wasn't telling Peter this. He was telling the Jews this while recognizing that Peter wanted to acquaint himself with those who were Jewish rather than Gentiles. He left one table to another because he didn't want to be acquainted with them or seen with them. And Peter had to remind them, look, they are fine. Like, what you require of them is not necessary for them to know Jesus. And there's another instance in here that I'm trying to find. I'll find it later because listeners are like, bro.
I think someone that I've really grown to really respect and I've learned a lot from is Pastor Brian Laritz. And I can't remember where he's pastoring these days. I want to say somewhere in California, maybe. But he just talking about how, like, it's not just that white people have to, you know, admit that, you know, that they have privilege or that they've benefited from racism throughout history, but it's the fact that all races, even, you know, African-American, Latino, Asian, Saudis, like everyone has to come, and the cross calls us all to follow Jesus and to crucify our flesh, to die to our lives and be resurrected. And so I think that's really key when we're talking about racial reconciliation, that we're not just talking about, like, you know, white people have it all wrong, you know, and they just need to get their act together, or black people have it all wrong, or white or like Asian, American, or whatever. But it's that everyone has to come, and everyone's called to lay their life down and die. You know, we're all called to that lifestyle, but we're not called to it. Like, I love what you said, like, not to assimilate, but we're also not called to just, like, radical individualism either. You know, of like, you just like there's nothing ever that I'm going to have to give up, because that's not the gospel either. You know, there's plenty. if you follow Jesus any amount of time, you're going to know that, like, no, that's not how that works. Like, you're going to have to give up plenty. But it's a complex issue. You know, it's not just, it's not like this one podcast is going to solve it all. And everyone's like, suddenly racism's gone. You know, it's like, I wish that was true, man. If I had the power for this podcast to do it, I would do whatever it took to make that happen. But
No, that's real, bro. Here's my challenge, because it is very true that because of the gospel, it unites all people, no matter the background, race, ethnicity. Now, the challenge that people overlook in that is, what does life look like after that is stated? Because we believe that, right? We believe that. And we know that it's true. But when you bring different people together, things get complicated. Yeah. It doesn't mean that because we're united in Christ that everything else that we know just comes in sync. Right? Marriage don't even happen that way.
No, it does not.
One with one other person. not always on the same page. That's about to be my life soon.
Yeah, man.
And so because of that,
I'm going to send this to you. I'm going to send this clip that you're saying, you know, about 3 years from now down to you.
I'm going to need it. I might have to watch this over. Send it to me on this day every year. April 21st, 2021. But because of that, it's important to know, particularly to white Christians, because I think this is the thing that they often forget. And I say this out of love. What are the things that God does require of you to sacrifice in order to love your brother and sister that have often been marginalized and oppressed?
Absolutely.
In that sense. And like, for black brothers and sisters, there's a requirement for us to know that there's going to be hardships in embracing racial reconciliation. The hardships that come with that, of often being misunderstood and not heard. But for white brothers and sisters to realize now's the opportunity to hear and to listen what often may be mistaken as unrighteous anger might actually be righteous anger that comes from God, because God hates injustice. So because of that, what does that look like for us to pursue that radically? I just don't want it to turn into reconciliation being this thing as well. If we're unified, nothing has to change. Honestly, there's going to have to be changes that have to be made.
Absolutely.
And it's going to mean, I mean, on the flip side, it means for people of color willing to be patient and to, But not at the expense of being traumatized. Because I think that's the thing that people can forget too. It's like you experience something for so long, you can become traumatized by those things.
Right.
Yeah.
Let the Lord strengthen us to do these things. So I think the roles look different
in
what it means to be unified. However, we have to pursue them in order to be unified.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it always would frustrate me, and something that I've had to learn just in the past few years of, I would hear, I mean, we've all heard this, like church people, like older church people, especially older white church people.
Lord bless them.
Yes, love them to death. But they would always say, boy, it wasn't like this back in my day. Like people were more, like things were back better in my day. And it wasn't until I came to college and I had some friends who were black, and I happened to think, well, wait a minute. Back in like the day they're talking about, there was more. Now there's still obviously racism today, but like we have made some progress since back in the 60s, you know? And so I always have to remember, like, hey, you should probably watch what you say, because for certain people, like it wasn't so great back in the day, you know? And just having that mindset of thinking of other people.
Well, I think that perfectly illustrates what you were talking about, Chris, of just like the white privilege, you know, kind of culture is that, you know, the way that a white man sees, you know, back 30, 40, 50 years ago, it was great. It was fantastic. There was no issue. Meanwhile, a couple blocks over, their black African-American friends, you know, were struggling, were in poverty because they couldn't get a job. There was nowhere that would hire, or they were being, you know, marginalized, treated poorly because of their skin. And that's where it's like, I think as a white man, that's been my biggest challenge, is to take my white lenses off, you know, take my white glasses off, you know, and then and then walk beside a black brother and sister or a Latino brother and sister, an Asian brother or sister, and say, what has your life been like? And what has, you know, and I think it's really interesting how Daniel, you know, the book of Daniel, he prays for the forgiveness of sin of Israel, but he identifies with that sin. And as far as we know, Daniel didn't do anything like that, but he identified with his people's sin and asked for forgiveness. And so I think that's maybe been the toughest thing for me, is like, maybe I personally haven't engaged in racist activities or whatever, but my people have. And you know, and what you could go back and forth all day, and there are people that go back and forth all day. Should, you know, are you guilty by association in that sense? I personally feel like, yeah, because my people, my white ancestors, didn't do a great job of showing the love of God and the equality of God all the way through every race. And so, you know, I've been trying to, with every person I can, to say personally, like, I'm sorry for the way my ancestors treated your ancestors. I'm truly sorry for that. And what can I do? What do I do that bothers you? What can I do that will help you? And that is, like what you said, that's where the unity is. Like, it's good talk, but then until you have those conversations, it's all just talk.
Yeah, no, that's real, man. And I think this is helpful too. We got to remember that sin is sin. They just come in different shapes. Dare I say sizes. I say sizes, but I don't want someone to think, oh, well, this is worse. Because this is worse than other, then I don't need to. I'm not saying shapes and sizes just to try to distinguish sin.
Yeah.
Of course, there are some different ramifications for me lying versus somebody being murdered, you know. But my main point in saying these things is, like, when we recognize that even the way we pursue sin as Christians, or sorry, not pursue sin, but pursue Christ as Christians, don't pursue sin.
We might have to keep you after the podcast, and we're going to have a whole different conversation.
Right. Oh, this is this man's theology. That's interesting. Huh. We're not airing this episode. No, but like, sin itself, when we're made new in Christ, we have to recognize our sin. Now, we also understand that sin does not identify who we are. We were made new in Christ. Our identity is in Him. He has made us, like, we've been fearfully and wonderfully made. And so the moment we're able to say that, right, that should change, that should even change the way that that people see racism. And I'm saying this because our church went through the book study on Color of Compromise. Mm-hmm. And what it is for, we had a few people, actually we had a lot more people who were white in that study than who were black. And the thing that they had often expressed is it's hard to read this because it's a pill to swallow. Mm-hmm. It's me realizing that my culture, my heritage, my race has done this and I'm a part of that.
Right.
Yeah. And what usually happens is you get people that run from that. You get people who aren't willing to say I'm racist or I have racial tendencies, or, you know, you get people who often say like, well, that was in the past. Like, you know, I wasn't there during that time. So I have nothing to do with that. You know what I mean? It's a different time now. You know what I mean? I'm not like that. Like, that's not the way we treat sin. And so this also shouldn't be treated the same way. It should take some humility to say, I'm learning, I'm growing.
Yeah.
I have hurt my brothers and sisters in some ways without realizing that. Mm. But in order for me to grow, like, it starts with recognizing that, but also knowing I'm not identified by that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that helps. I think it helps when I often tell people that too. Like, just because this is the case, just because white privilege is a thing, just because racism is a thing, just because you're probably racist is a thing, does not mean that you have to stay there.
Yeah,
you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just those words that sting. Anyway, yeah, it's like we don't treat sin the same. We recognize sin. We say, Jesus, help me turn from that. This is one of those matters. Like, man, these are the ways that I see those biases to that racism. Or things that I did not realize were hurtful. Lord, help me turn away from that because it's not who I am. And that's where me as someone who's black in Christ can reaffirm my brothers and sisters mm-hmm. who are white. That's where my people who are of color can say, hey, this ain't you. I already know you love me. Like, but walk in that. You know what I mean? Don't step away from the hard things because I need you to embrace it. I need you to embrace it to help us out. You know what I mean? So we can help each other out, really. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That's where real reconciliation starts to happen.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Well, Chris, thanks so much for, you know, being on here. We're going to have to get scooting here soon.
Yeah.
I have to somewhere I got to be, but if you want to hang on the line here a minute, we'll end the recording and then we'll kind of tell you how the plan is to get the podcast out and stuff. But man, we appreciate your heart. We appreciate your honesty and just the willingness to engage courageously with these conversations, because it's not easy. You know, it's like looking in a mirror and you see all the blemishes, you know, and nobody wants to see that.
Yeah.
But the only way you can realize that's how you look and you need to change is that you look in the mirror. You know, so I feel like this is like what one of those conversations is like. It's like, we may not always like what we hear. We may not always like what we're going to see, but man, we're going to be better for this. So thank you for lending your voice to us today.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, man, there's a grace. If there's anything I need the listeners to know, there's grace. There's grace through Christ. And so you're going to experience the grace even through me when I talk about these matters. There needs to be realness. There needs to be raw and transparency. There needs to be, I mean, it's an ugly matter.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
But there's grace.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Hear it from me, y'all.
Sure. Well, thank you so much again,
thanks, Chris,
for your time. Hey. And listeners, if you're in the Muncie area, just be on the lookout for a hip hop loving man that loves Jesus, and you probably found Chris.
Yeah, I'm often at the caffeinery, so you know.
Once
things start to lift from COVID.
Yeah, absolutely.
More willing, so you'll see me there. That's probably gonna be one of the first places I go to once things start lifting.
Yeah. Well, hey listeners, thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back again next week for, we'll actually probably end up splitting this one into two, but yeah, we'll be back regardless. Whenever you hear this, we'll be back for another week. So we'll see you guys.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Take care, y'all.